So this is our writer's mastermind, and Debbie has just sent me her beginnings of her story, and I have not had a chance to read it yet, Debbie. I apologize. I've been on my phone this morning in Clubhouse. I was on with Ruth this morning in Clubhouse, and I'm just now circling back to get my brain back to the writing mode. Because all morning I have been in travel mode because we have a tribe trip this week and we are headed to Chattanooga, Tennessee for a day and then Gatlinburg for another 3 or 4 days, a total of 4 nights and 5 days out hiking. And I don't think we're going to take our bikes. I don't think we're going to do any biking, but we are going to do a lot of hiking, and I get to do my very first section of the Appalachian Trail. For the first time ever, my very first section. Yes. And I'm going to do a section where Sherry is. I want to do a section in each state. So this state will be my Tennessee section hike for the Appalachian Trail. And if you remember about the time I was training for this last year, or maybe even as long as a year and a half ago, is when I was really having a lot of trouble with the joints in my toes and lots of foot pain. And then when I went to kind of investigate my options and what I could do about that. I finally got to a doctor that did all kinds of x-rays. And then I was having some serious hip pain, and it came out, fast forward the story. It came out that I only have arthritis in my toes and in my knees. I do not have any in my hips. That it was 3 herniated discs in my back is what was causing my hip pain. Wow. So I have since gone through 24 decompression treatments for my back, and I am totally pain-free in my hip now. So I said, how does that work without back surgery? And long story short, he said, we decompress your whole spine. He said, it's like putting the jelly back in the donut.
Wow.
He said the pain was caused because you were getting pinched between a couple of vertebrae. And he said, and when we decompress and stretch that, he said, all of that spinal column goes back in where it belongs. And he said, and if we can hold that at a certain position for long enough, he said, your body will actually heal itself. He said, but you have to continually keep that stretched. So anyway, at the moment,
are you doing inversion therapy?
I have an inversion table, but that is, I want something that I can do even when I travel. So they've actually set me up with something off of Amazon of all things. And it curves up this way and you put it in the small of your back right where the herniated disc is. And I kind of lie back over it to where I'm actually pushing my belly up and my back is curved backward. And it puts space, it does the same thing as an inversion table. It puts space between the vertebrae and stretches that spinal column back inside. And I do that for 10 minutes every night. And that's all it took. Mm. Now I did 24 decompression treatments where they actually put weights on me on an inversion table. And I actually was stretched with weights for 24 treatments. But now I'm just maintaining it with the little device that fits in my suitcase. So there you have it. So anyway, I am now ready to try my time on the Appalachian Trail. So I'll let you know how that goes.
Are you going to do a little bit of blogging from there right on the trail and so we can see the scenery?
Yeah, I'll be doing a lot of pictures. Yeah. So then when I'll put it together.
No, I'm saying blogging where you're actually talking while you're walking. Oh.
Probably not, because I'll be with Mark and he consistently talks about airplanes and cars the whole time we're out walking. and I do a lot of okay, yeah, that's interesting.
Sounds like somebody else I know.
Sherry's laughing. Sherry, that's a little insight into your world, isn't it?
So yes, they would get along so well if they ever met.
Yeah, we'll have to keep the two guys at least 50 feet apart at all times, or they'll get into trouble together. So anyway, so that's the story. But yes, I will be doing some blogging and lots of pictures and posting and all of that. So I'll keep everybody informed with what we're doing. But we're going to start in Chattanooga with Stone Mountain, and we're going to do Rock City Gardens. We're going to hike that first, and then we're going to go to Ruby Falls and go down in the caves into the falls. And that's a mystery date for Mark. He has no idea we're going there. And then we segue over to Gatlinburg and do pieces of the Appalachian Trail. And then, of course, in the evenings, it'll be dress up and dinner shows and, you know, nice dinners and theater and all of that. So, and then a 6-hour drive home. So, and then Ruth's going to be on the road too this weekend. I found out this morning in our clubhouse. So she is traveling to Branson this coming weekend.
Which, that's not that far from us. It's far from you guys, but it's only about 4 or 5 hours from us. We're going to combine a quick trip to Branson and then go down into Northwest Arkansas and see our kiddos.
Mm-hmm. And I told her
they have the passion play right now.
That's what she was talking about.
Well, not. I think you're thinking of the passion play. I'm going to Sight and Sound, which is Queen Esther.
Queen Esther's in. Got it.
But
near their original Sight and Sound, by the way.
Yes, I thought you did. At least I knew it was in Pennsylvania.
It's not. It's about an hour from me.
Yeah.
Hey, well, I want to live where Sherry does. Sherry is an hour from everything I love. She's an hour from New York City. She's close to the Appalachian.
No, I'm 3 hours from New York City.
Oh, okay. I thought you were closer. But hey, you're a lot closer than me. I'm 8 hours from New York City.
Same.
Yeah, I love it. I love everything where all around where she is there. So, and I keep looking. When a property comes up that's in my price point, you know, I have to do my part. If they're going to give away something, I've got to do my part and pick it up. So I keep checking. So maybe. Anyway, today we're going to talk about writing. So Debbie, tell us so far, you have started your manuscript. So tell us so far your thoughts, your struggles, what's going on there?
I can't say that I've had any struggles.
Nice.
Other than time.
Yes, I get that.
And the interesting part was all of a sudden I realized that the way I wanted to start my story, I realized I got to back up a little. So I've decided that the first chapter is about my mom. The second chapter is about my dad, exactly, you know, who he was, what he did, so on and so on. And I realized that would be a better segue into Once Upon a Time. And because the way I'm thinking is that there needs to be a little bit of understanding. And I don't know what gave me this idea, but I find that it's easier now for me to go into Once Upon a Time after I've done that. We'll see if it works.
Well, Sandy and I, we were just having this conversation when I went to the writer's workshop, the Cincinnati Fiction Writers sponsored the workshop in Cincinnati a couple of weekends ago. And we had two publishers there, and they actually critique some of those first pages in the manuscripts. And one of the things that the one said, she said, I would have stopped reading because it was just too much of telling me the background and the history. She said there wasn't any real movement to the story. So she said what she recommended to this particular writer who did that, she said, I recommend that you get rid of that, not get rid of that, but take that off the front and hang on to it, start your story, and then weave that in to your story, almost like a flashback. And I've read some books like that, but don't change it right now, Debbie. Don't go back and change it. Just keep writing, because when you get the whole story out, then you can go back and decide in what order you want to tell the story. Mm-hmm. Are you with me? So just don't stop. If it helps you to do that background, and then Once Upon a Time, here's where I came into the picture, go ahead and write it like that. And all I'm saying is when you finally get ready to have some editing done and you go to edits, don't get your feelings hurt if an editor says, get rid of that. And again, it doesn't mean you have to get rid of it. It just means you need to show who your mom and dad was in your story.
And that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. But keep it where it is for right now. Just keep writing and don't worry about that. And that's one of the things I wanted to talk about today, is that when we're writing, and this is always the tough part, when you're writing a book, it's like, for those of us that are parents, it's like birthing a baby. You're up with it when it's sick, you're happy with it when it's well, you only leave it with the best babysitters. And you certainly don't want somebody to come in and tell you that you're parenting that baby wrong. And so oftentimes, once we birth this book project and we're ready with our manuscript to turn it over to an editor or to a critique writer or just beta readers, whatever, and they start sending their feedback, you can get your feelings hurt. Well, it's my story. Who are they to tell me I should take that part out or I should move that part around? But don't get your feelings hurt. But just remember, at the end of the day, it's your story. And mm-hmm. whatever anybody recommends, even if it's an editor that you pay big money to, if they come back and say, we recommend you do this, this, and this, sit with that for a minute. Think about that for a minute, because they're looking at it as an outside reader. And sometimes they do have some very valuable insight that you do need to listen to. But if they want you to take out your main character or change something that you're very passionate about, just remember at the end of the day, you don't have to change it. At the end of the day, it's your story, it's your book, and you get to leave in what you want to leave in. So it's not carved in stone that you have to do what all these other folks say, but do take into consideration their expertise.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And don't get your feelings hurt. And that's the tough part for some of us, because again,
it's like your neighbor telling you your child is ugly. You know, it's like,
yeah, what? Exactly.
Who are you?
And I'm talking to myself here as well as everyone else, because I just started, down that path. And so when you put a lot of your blood, sweat, and tears into a project, you hate for somebody to tell you did it wrong. So, but just remember, it's your story. And oftentimes, if you can embrace those opinions, it does make for a better story. Because at the end of the day, you want your book to be readable. You want it to be relatable. You want the reader to keep interest. And sometimes it's those tweaks is what makes the difference between a good book and a book that doesn't get picked up or that doesn't get read or doesn't get the reviews that you're hoping for it to get. So all I'm saying, I guess, at the end of the day is be open. Be open to the critiques. So Sandy, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, it will. You're right. And I've been a beta reader. Uh-huh. It's that once your book is all done to your satisfaction, you give it to a couple of readers to read and provide feedback. And I've been that for a couple people. And how they describe it is they see if there's two or more people saying the same thing about a certain area, really focus on that. Sometimes if it's only a comment from one person, then you could tell it's just those personal differences and leave it at that. Or, and we're talking about developmental, that content, not necessarily you spelled that word wrong. That's different. You're happy when they catch that. But if it's a critical part, or not even critical, but if it's a content part, like how you describe somebody, or if you spent too much time telling and not enough showing, and if you have two or more people saying that, that's probably a problem. It's going to, if it stands out for two or more people, it's going to stand out mm-hmm. for more.
Yeah, good points. Good points.
Good point.
I'm going to scroll back to the top. This is the course, Write From Anywhere in the World, Helping You Get Published. And so when I scroll down, here's the topics we're covering. And we're right here on number three, getting feedback from editors, critique circles, and beta readers. And so as we scroll down, there's all kinds of information here. So if I start there, just know that this is in the course. All of you can get to this. And so I'm not going to read this. I mean, you can go into the course and read all of this, but this first section, I really appreciated. This is getting feedback. And so there's 8 steps to getting ready. Number one, you're going to complete your first draft. That's kind of where Debbie and I are. We're going to complete our first draft. Ruth has already written a book. Sandy's written more than one book. Sherry's written more than one. So complete the first draft, then revise that first draft. And then revise your second draft. You see where I'm going with this?
Sure.
Revise your third draft. Then is when you're going to give it to a beta reader or 2 or 5. And when I was at the writer's workshop, they said, here's what you don't want to do. You don't want to give it out to all of your beta. Let's say that you've got 20 people that's willing to read your work. You don't want to give it out to 20. Because all of a sudden, all 20 are going to have an opinion. So they said, what you want to do is just give it out to 2 or up to 2 to 5 and let them give you your feedback, and then consider those critiques and add the appropriate revisions and review that. And then maybe give it to another 2 to 5 that's on your list. Oh. If you've got 10, see what I mean? Mm-hmm. And instead of giving it to the same ones, because you're, again, when your book finally gets published and you're out there on Amazon or Barnes and Noble, you want a larger audience. You want it to appeal to a larger audience. And so now you're going to go back and maybe let the other 2 to 5 folks that you have read it and then consider all that. Then review that draft. And when you're done with that, that's when you're ready to give it to a professional editor. Now, this is where it comes back and you feel like the naughty child in first grade. This is where it comes back with all the red marks in the margins. And so that's when I have a suggestion when that happens is just read through all of it. Don't start it at number one and go, okay, I got to fix that. And then number two, I got to fix that. And then number three, I got to fix that. Read through all of those suggestions from the editor. Just kind of step back and take more of a 30,000 foot view and just read through all of it. Now, if it's a bunch of little stuff, like you misspelled this word, fix it as you go. But if it's content development, kind of step back and see if that editor is taking your work in the direction you intended it to go. And let me say that again, make sure that the editor is taking your work the direction you intended it to go. Because if they saw or heard in your work a totally different direction, then that is content issues. Mm-hmm. Because if you can see in all of their recommendations that they're taking you someplace you did not intend it to go, you need to back up and make maybe your intentions a little clearer in the beginning of your story. Now, when you're a mystery writer, that's a little more difficult because you want the reader to think you're going to the West when you're really going to end up in the East at the end of the story. You know, that's what makes a mystery is it ends differently. And you want your reader to go, ah, so that's what I missed somewhere back in the book. That's what happened. So it's an art. Writing is an art. It really is an art. But consider all of those revisions and make sure that the editor is going where you intended, and then review that draft. At that point, you're ready to start shopping it out to literary agents and publishing companies if you want to go that route, or you're going to choose to self-publish. But that's at the point where you start shopping it out. Now, that's where, when I went to this writer's conference here a weekend or so ago, that's where all those folks had their manuscript. They'd already done these 8 steps. They'd already done all this. And now there were literary agents there at the conference they were pitching to. They were doing their pitch. Now, I didn't go and listen to a pitch. Sandy, is there going to be some pitching at your writer's workshop?
Not this year. It'll just be those effective first lines. and how.
Okay.
So similar to the ones where the first page was read at your workshop and a conference and that.
So I don't even know what a pitch sounds like. So
I could tell you that real quickly.
Okay. Describe a pitch.
Sure. You walk into the room and you're hoping it's just you and the agent. Sometimes they have them all jammed into one, but you forget about that. You have 5 minutes and you have two to three minutes to make your pitch and tell them the key elements of your book, such as mostly the overriding goal of your character and the plot that leads them and how the story ends. And you have 2 to 3 minutes to do that. And then you leave 2 to 3 minutes for the agent to ask you questions about it. And that's it.
Okay. And they either decide they're interested and they want to know more, or thank you very much for your time. Next, please.
Yes, exactly. Well, normally they won't go that far, but they will. We'll say thank you very much. We have contact information from you. We'll get in touch. Or what you're hoping they're going to say is, would you send me the first 50 pages? And that's all. That's very hopeful. And that is, and what is key, even if you bomb the thing, if you go back and revise and do another draft or however you go, and now you know you think you're ready, what pays off in that query is the fact you say, "Hi, Mary Pat, I saw you at, and I pitched my book of, and I have revised it, blah, blah, blah. I hope you'll reconsider," and you go that route. Because if nothing else, that in your query letter, like if you're not meeting them in person this time, in your query letter, in that first sentence or two, how you know the agent is absolutely critical. They'll pay more attention to you there than they will if you just saw them online somewhere and, who wants books about horses? Oh, okay, I'll go there. You have to have some dazzling sort of opening, but that's your opening. That's your foot in the door.
Well, and that's why these writer conferences and workshops are so important, because you can say, "I met you at this writer conference," or "I met you at this writer workshop," or "Your name came up several times at my last writer's workshop." And that's a good segue to get your foot in the door.
Yeah. And at my workshop, Jane Friedman will be doing both traditional publishing and independent self-publishing. And in her talk on traditional publishing, that's where an agent comes in. And that's where the query letter and talk will come up. And if you still have questions after she's done, oh, by all means, you know, ask her, because she knows all there is to know about agents and querying and so forth. And that would even make it like I was at, I met Jane Friedman for a weekend and she recommended you, something like that. Something where it's more than I saw your name online, something like that. Uh-huh. So if you can connect, I mean, there are even times, and I hope I'm not getting off the issue, there are even times if you can't do any of that, almost every literary agency has a blogger, somebody in their company who has to blog on the topic. So let's say you want to do horses and you see somebody has an agent who loves horses, whatever it is. And you say, "Oh, I was reading your blog the other day and it came up that you have a Palomino." "Well, I do too. And my story." So you see how you're trying to personalize that first sentence and make it not like, "I saw you on check." You don't want it to look like a checkoff list. Almost
found you in the yellow pages.
Exactly. Make it look like you had tea and crumpets with them, that sort of thing. Personalize it as much as possible.
Yes, I get it. And so again, these workshops and conferences are just hugely important. Plus, you get to rub elbows with folks that are doing the same thing you're doing. And that's also very, very important. So anyhow, we're going to review the other parts in the weeks ahead. But right now, I'm just going to kind of read this one. I want to specifically focus on the intro steps, considering critiques and adding appropriate revisions from beta readers and manuscript editors. Now, to utilize these very valuable resources to their best advantage, you need to first define your authorial role in this whole process. Understand that without a shadow of a doubt, you are your manuscript's creator. That's what I was saying when we first started today. It's a dictatorship. You run the show because it's your story, which means that you have the final say, no matter what anyone else tells you. But just know that their opinions are very important. So incidentally, that includes your characters. I know that mine take over my first drafts. Yeah, my characters definitely take over my first drafts, doing whatever they want, however they want. But in the final draft, I get them under control, not them. I can choose to let them have their way, or I can make them obey my dictatorial will instead. And I've heard so many people say this when they started to write. They said that the characters just kind of wrote the story. The story just kind of takes on a life of its own. And if you are a writer, you get that. If you are a writer, you get that, that your characters will take on a life of their own. I interviewed an author the other day on the Ohio Writers Guild, and she said, "I was really sad when my book came to an end. I'm really going to miss those people." Yeah. And I knew what she meant. I knew what she meant. So what's the right choice? That's the same exact question you need to apply to your beta readers, story lovers who are willing to give you overall insights into your writing, and your manuscript editors. Now, the answer will be the same, and it depends. So I say this both as a manuscript editor — I'm not an editor — and as someone who has run her own manuscript editor for the novels I create, she and I are very good at what we do, pointing out where paragraphs come across as being clunky when details don't match between plot points. Now, again, you're going to have some editors that's going to point this stuff out to you. And if you're a new writer, this is where you want to pay attention to those discrepancies. Because I don't know about you, but when I write something, I find it hard to find what's wrong with it because I wrote it to begin with.
Yeah.
And so it's much easier to have someone else read it and tell me where it kind of was a disconnect for them. So incidentally, there's also a quick to shower praise when praise is due, because the best beta readers and manuscript editors don't just show writers where they can strengthen. They also highlight the spots where the author already handled it really well. And those are a great shot in the arm, you know, because now you're like, yes, I can do this. So what's the best way to grow as an author? Anything else? You want to get the big picture. Another best way to grow as an author is to really consider the feedback you get, both constructive criticism and well-deserved praise. Don't ever give anyone else automatic authority over your writing, no matter how much you respect the beta reader or manuscript editor in question. The strongest authors accept that they're not perfect, and that's why they look for outside feedback in the first place. They also accept that nobody else is perfect, and that's why they really stop and consider outside feedback before they accept or discard it, always asking this question: do I think that the suggested change intellectually, emotionally, professionally, psychologically, and or spiritually strengthened the work? If the answer is yes, then run with it. If the answer is no, then don't. Getting feedback from beta readers and manuscript editors is as simple and as complicated as that. So there's no, I guess the overarching idea is that there is no black and white here. It's all shades of gray, because what you think is good writing, somebody else might not. And so please take it with a grain of salt, but do consider those critiques. Okay. Now, making the most of your editor's feedback, we can all get into that. But I want to scroll on down to, because here's the topic that I really want to talk about today, because as we start to write, it's like, well, how do we put these groups together without paying an editor? So here is how to set up an effective and efficient support group. So this is what I want to talk about today. So take advantages of a critique circle. Now, I have chosen to join because I want to write this mystery novel, which is fiction. I have decided to join the Cincinnati Fiction Writers, even though it's in Cincinnati, which is like 2 hours from me. But they do an in-person meetup once a month, just more of a social. They really don't get into their writing too. Oh, they might talk about writing, but it's more of a social event. But then once a month on Zoom, they actually do critique readings of their work, and they all, like a mastermind, and they all jump in and give their opinion. And it's a critique group, and they all give their opinion on one person's writing. And you might be struggling with, you know, how to tie, you know, two scenes together, and then they'll help with ideas on how to do that. So wherever you get stuck in your writing, they can help. And then they can actually critique when you just read a section of your writing, they can say it needs to be more showing instead of telling, or, you know, you need to change maybe what voice you're telling the story in or showing the story in. So there's all kinds of critiques that go on, but it's fun to just join some of those groups and just sit back and listen on what they're doing. You don't have to jump in and participate at the very beginning. You can join into some of those groups and just sit back and see how they're helping other authors. And I learned a lot just listening in. It helped me make decisions on how I wanted my writing to come across, just listening into some of these groups. So you can find them on Facebook. You can join them on Meetup. They're all over the place. Number of members. When starting a group, it's important to have enough people to elicit sufficient opinions and to keep the momentum going through vacations, sick kids, due dates, because not everybody's going to show up every. So if you only have three of you and two of you can't make it, all of a sudden you're a group of one. So you have to have enough people that can keep it going no matter what's happening in everyone's world. And I suggest 5 or 6, not more than 7 or 8. That allows for 10 pages per person per meeting. 10 pages afford adequate advancement while protecting the personal writing time. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. No more than 7 or 8. So that way, when you are reading your work, you have some time to read through several pages, and you don't get squeezed out because there's too many members. The next decision is determine whether the group will be genre specific or general. Now, I like mixed critique groups because I write a lot of nonfiction, but I want to write fiction. So I kind of like to hear both, but I have decided to get involved in this Cincinnati group, and it's all nonfiction because I know that's where I'm lacking, is in the nonfiction. So in addition, I learned tricks from the genres I might not ordinarily read, and writers outside my area do not allow me to resort to shortcuts often tolerated within fiction categories or in my nonfiction category. So I think having a mix of folks makes writing better. Okay. Now, manuscript length. Once you establish the makeup of your circle, you should also have an idea of the manuscript length as you invite others to join you. Does the group prefer longer but fewer pieces? It depends on the conversation. I think to start off, and again, I'll know once I join into this Cincinnati Fiction Writers, I'll know how they do it there. But I think I would like shorter but more pieces until I get an idea of my voice. And I can see where you could start with a group of maybe 7 or 8 and then maybe break off into maybe a group of 4 that wants to do longer pieces where you have more time to devote to those longer reads and get some feedback on what you're writing. So we'll see how that works. But anyhow, it says if a group of 6 agrees to cover 1 novel per month, everyone gets a review within those 6 months. And trust me, it'll take me longer than 6 months to write my story. So meeting schedule. Now, how often should they meet? It depends on the members, you know. And again, I like the Zoom idea. Doesn't matter where you're located. You don't have that drive time. So I kind of like that. Although I kind of like the social aspect where they meet up once a month. And it's a couple hour drive, so I don't know how often I'll do that, but maybe quarterly I'll try to meet up with the group so that I put some names and faces together in person. But I do like the Zoom. And so that brings us to the next, is the meeting place. Are you going to do a library, a coffee shop, you know, and on Zoom? See, again, here, the advantages include not having to clean your house. Well, you don't have to clean your house if you're on Zoom either, especially me. You know, I can just put up a screen, you know, here's my kitchen behind me. So I don't have to clean my house. So just deciding when and how and where and how long you're going to read and how many members, all of that goes into having a group. And because I've got so much on my plate already on purpose, you know, intentional on my part, I don't want to add putting together a group. So that's why I went out to find a group that was already established, already had some rules. And I want to surround myself with writers who are ahead of me. Mm-hmm. I want to surround myself with writers that maybe have already published a book or two and that they're in the middle of writing a story. And I wanted fiction. So that's why I chose the one I did. So anyway, comments, questions, thoughts. Sandy, we'll start with you.
I've done it all. I have done every type of variation of a writer's group out there as possible. Anything from three friends and I getting together, reading out loud in a First Watch restaurant once a month, and which is funny. It depends on what you're writing, but to read it out aloud-ish, and I have a voice that booms. So I was always felt constrained by that. But nevertheless, we met in restaurants and we read aloud our pieces and commented on them. And then I had and that was once a month. And I had two former students who says, "Oh, please, Miss Kajerik, when will you meet?" And we met once a week at a Wendy's. And they were all about prompts. All they wanted was to get your prompts out there. And so they wrote little stories, prompt ideas. You know what a prompt is, story prompt, on little pieces of paper. And we drew them out of a hat. And then we had a short story ready for the next time and vice versa. So I almost laughed at them because here are my former students. Here I am, this, you know, teacher. Ha ha. I have still a wealth of stories that I wrote as a result, because I always did my homework and I always had these stories written. So that was wonderful. And
kind of like a Toastmasters for writers.
Oh, exactly. And now eventually over the years, I graduated. Yellow Springs had a writer's circle. I didn't know anybody but the leader of it. You came with 5 copies of your piece. You shared them, whoever needed sharing, you read it out loud. People made comments, whoever had a copy made a comment on it. And then folks would just comment in general from what they heard. I did that for a few years. And then I graduated beyond that. Now I'm in a professional, I guess I call it professional writer's workshop. I had to apply and I had to show what I wrote and I had to show how I would critique somebody's writing. And they voted me in popularity, you know, popular vote in the group and I was in. And that is a totally different setup. We do meet once a month. We met in Columbus, but after the pandemic hit, we too went Zoom. And now we have members from Boston, from San Francisco, from upstate New York, Ohio as well. And a week ahead of time, by Sunday midnight, when we meet on a Saturday, a Sunday afternoon, previous Sunday midnight, 5 people can submit and up to 10 to 20,000 words. I've done a lot of critiquing, but I've got a week to do it. We can download it by Wednesday. And what is cool is we have anywhere between 5 to 10 people show up. And we go around the room. If it's your piece they're talking about, you say nothing. And you have 5 minutes. Everybody in the room has 5 minutes to tell you what they thought of the piece. And you can furiously write down notes. But what is cool, I don't know if you've heard of Dropbox, but Dropbox is where they put their written critiques in text notes and so forth. And so at the end of the day, I not only have verbal critiques from each of them, when I eventually go to that Dropbox, we give them a few days to get in there. I now have 5, 6, 8, 10 comments written in the text that I give them. So there's such a variety. It's just nice, like you said, to have somebody besides your girlfriend, boyfriend, spouse, your children.
Because they always think you're wonderful.
Yeah, thank you. My mom would love everything I've done. So yeah, you're right. It could be anybody, but start off, I would think, with somebody you trust, at least, who will do that. You know, at this level that I'm at, we do go for positive, but it's not the major thing because everybody in the group has published. So you know, they want to make sure their editor or agent will like what we're, or the magazine that they're intending to give it to or submit it to will accept it. So, yeah. But starting out, I'd say find two people that you can trust, even if they're not avid writers, if they're avid readers. And in your genre, that helps too. So I agree.
Good stuff. Yes.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
Not easy. Yeah, it's still not easy when someone is criticizing something, but after you let it sit for a bit and you go back and you can, your emotions are kind of like, you know, okay, let me go do it. And then it'll make sense. So.
Well, I've had lots of practice because in my bed and breakfast, of course, we always ask for reviews and everybody has a different opinion, you know. Yeah. And so whenever I get a one or a two star, the first thing, it, you know, I get my backup like, what? I worked really hard. What do you mean? You didn't? I have to kind of sit with it for a minute and, you know, and I have to then try to put myself in their shoes and ask myself, why did they think that?
Yeah.
You know, let me try to look at it from their perspective. And over the years, it has helped me get better, much, much better at how, you know, I present our hospitality, because I take those reviews very seriously. And I think it's the same in your writing. I think as you sit with some of those critiques and ask yourself, what made this person feel this way or think this about my writing? I think it does make a difference in your writing, and it'll make you a better writer overall.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I think, Debbie, you're doing memoir-like work. Mm-hmm. That would be a challenge. I don't know if I've done biographies, but I have never done a memoir. And I was thinking when we're talking about critiquing, what would happen if someone criticized something you said about your parents or your life or how you spoke about something that's emotionally attached? I think there might be something very specific for memoir writers out there. And I was thinking, I need a memoir writer at some point in time in a future workshop just to hear more about that. So
that's a good point.
I would think that would
be. Yeah, because her story is her story.
Sure. I mean, if I'm writing about dragons and mermaids or something, that's one thing. But if I'm writing about my family and a very, very potentially traumatic experience of mine, I don't know.
Well,
I think the critique would go more along the line of how it made the reader feel and what Debbie's intention was of making the reader feel. If she wanted the reader to feel like a scared three-year-old because she was a scared three-year-old, for example, then I would think that the critique would be along the line on how to make the reader feel what she was feeling. I think it would be more along those lines, not necessarily changing the trajectory of the story, but how, and it goes back to showing the emotion instead of just telling the emotion. I think maybe that's where I would look forward. If I were in Debbie's shoes, I would look forward to those kinds of critiques on how to make my reader feel what I was feeling as I went through the story.
Yeah.
I want them to understand how I felt and that I want them to understand that no matter what they're going through is their their feelings, their view. And I wouldn't have the right to correct them. Mm-hmm. I think maybe just the word usage would be important to help the person reading understand.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be tricky,
mm-hmm.
but yet not that difficult to understand. So for me, it's, you know, this is, once you get into it, knowing and thinking about things like this, there's a little bit more to understanding what a person, and I just am almost done reading another book, and I found it very fascinating as to how she wrote the story. Mm. And like pertaining to what you said, Kathy, she told the story. And then after the story, she went to help you understand what the story was about, or her story. And I think that's kind of going along with what you were saying. Oh, I got to take this. I'm sorry.
Nope, I get it. Go ahead, Debbie. Sherry, what are your thoughts so far? Did you have some critiques and some beta readers when you were writing your book?
Yes, I did have some critiques. I had two editors. One was a teacher. One was more of a English dictator.
They're out there.
And I knew I needed that. The idea of the beta reader, the way you're describing it, no, I didn't have that except for my husband.
Yeah, that's good. Hey, Stephen King always credits his wife as his first reader, so that works.
So with this one, you've got me thinking, though, that some of the audience that we're accumulating, like there's one guy who's like, can I order it now?
Wow.
I'm like, he needs to be a beta reader, and I'm going to have to bring this to Ms. Jay-Z's attention and see what she thinks about us picking a select group of people who are routinely coming to the events that we're hosting.
Ooh, yeah.
As beta readers. And I like the idea that you put it out twice, one round, fix those, put it out another round, fix those before we go to an editor. And I know that our ghostwriter, Sandy, we hired a ghostwriter this time, is like trying to push us to get it to the editor. And we are both going, we need to pause a little bit. We've paused her a little bit already because she wanted this thing launched back in August.
So there's two of you that are co-authoring the book, and you already have an editor that is already.
We have a ghostwriter.
A ghostwriter. Okay, so the two of you are writing, and you have a ghostwriter that's putting it all together for you. And she's the one pushing you to get it off to an editor, and you feel that you want to put it out to a couple of beta readers before.
Yeah,
do that.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yes.
Now, we have sent out chapters 1, 2, and 3 to a plethora of people to do endorsements, but to send out the whole book for beta readers, we have not done that at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So forgive me, my office manager is being very disruptive today.
Yes, I see that. I love it.
And well, I have another call I've got to scoot to. Kathy, are you available later?
I am. I have a 2:00 with my Happy House Hunters, and then I'm open. So I'm open between now and 2 after this call ends, and then I'm open after 3.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's catch up after 3 to talk about Florida.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you. All right. Catch you later.
All right, sweetie.
Stay well.
Yeah, we have a tribe trip coming up to Florida. We did it last year and again this year. Last year, I was a speaker, Ruth was a speaker, and this year Sherry is a speaker. So,
nice.
So we're kind of excited about that. Ruth, I see that you've been listening in. I don't know if you're at a place where you can tap in. What are your thoughts? And did you have any critique groups or beta readers while you were writing your book?
Probably not per se. I did have my husband read it, which I'm not sure if that was a good or bad.
Doesn't matter.
I don't think he read it for content as much as he read it for, this doesn't sound right. Something's wrong in that sentence. You know, he was at that stage. So I don't know.
And that's a good stage too. That's a good stage. Mm-hmm. And if you're not sure, you could even guide your beta reader saying, look for this. Does this work here? When right. I did the biography of George W. Bush, and the company that paid me to do it, guess who had to edit it or take a look at it? A professor of history at Southern Methodist University in Texas. I go, holy smokes. It came back fine. There was one episode when George W. Bush went through a period of drinking too much, and he got up, he was in a restaurant, and he read this gentleman's critique of him. And in that over drunken state, he stood up, went over to the person who critiqued him, who was there having dinner with his family, and just berated him. And the Southern Methodist editor or critique person said, I don't think you should put that in there. And I, it's one of those, what? You're probably right. Yeah. So that did not go in. But yeah, no, you have all kinds, I'll read paragraphs or sections to my husband. My husband's an artist. He's a woodcarver, and he's always showing me his work. And I'm thinking, okay, mine takes a little longer, but let me read this to you. And sometimes just in the act of hearing your own voice, hearing it read, they always say, read it aloud. Well, I feel kind of silly, and I should start practicing into the recorder, as you said, Kathy, just to get used to hearing me talk to myself out loud. But sometimes it's just the act of reading aloud that you learn so much about what works. If you're stumbling anywhere, mark that with a highlighter and go back and figure out why.
Right. Uh-huh. It makes sense.
Yeah. But wow. So your husband reads your work then, huh?
I wish. I mean, he did that one time because I made him. Or I just said, I really want you to read this, before it goes out in print. Mm-hmm. And so I would call it, he suffered through it. Okay. now that was many years ago, that was probably 6-7 years ago now. I don't know. And so, yeah, I think we'd be at a different place now. Because we've been growing in our relationship since then. So I think that we'd be in a different place than we were then.
Yeah. So.
Well, according to Mark, he just loves everything I do. So I have to take that with a grain of salt, because I'm like, okay, I'm sure he's a little on the biased side.
Yeah.
And so I have to just go, well, thank you, honey. And then go get 3 more other opinions just to be sure that I'm on the right track. Yeah. Yeah. Cause he's like, this is wonderful. And I'm like, no, it's not wonderful. It might be okay, but it's not wonderful yet. So yeah.
Yeah.
So I have to be careful with that, because he wants to be my biggest cheerleader. It's like he's made a decision to be my biggest cheerleader, which is nice in the relationship. But I also have to be able to discern that just because he thinks it's wonderful doesn't mean it's necessarily wonderful. And I have to realize that.
Yeah. It's right up there with asking, do I look fat in this? So,
exactly.
It depends on what you can really deal with. And how, so, yeah. But
yep, I get it. So any aha moments for today? I think for me, my big one is just to surround myself with writers that are in the same genre as me at the moment, because I really feel that I need that. So that's my big aha. Sandy, any big ahas for you today?
I like there was something you had read that I liked what you were reading about same with the gal who left, where you have it to a couple of beta readers and then bring it back, take a look at it, and then give it to a couple more. Yeah. Sometimes just be aware they don't get things back as quickly as you'd like. But who knows? It depends on whom you're working with. There are avenues that you could just ask for them online and share your stories online. I get a little nervous about that. So sharing my stuff online. Though an app called Wattpad does a lot of that. So it's well respected.
Okay, but good to know. I'll have to check that out. Debbie,
Getting it into a community of writers really opens things up for a variety of things that you are looking for specifically.
One is it helps teach me how I should be thinking.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah, it teaches me how I should be thinking when I surround myself with folks that are ahead of me and what it is that I want to do, whatever that is. And at this point, it's writing a fiction novel. So yeah. So I like to surround myself with folks that are ahead of me in that endeavor. So Debbie, how about you? What, any aha moment?
Well, I'm glad you pointed out that you had this on the internet in your academy. I didn't realize it, or it's, you know, but that's, I'm glad to see that so that I can go back and look it over. Mm-hmm. And, but I'll agree with what Sandy said about giving it to two, get it corrected, and then giving it to two more, because I think by doing it that way, you're minimizing the bombardment of the critiques all at once. Mm-hmm. And you're gonna get some, like, for saying that, you know, it's my story.
Yeah.
But I like that idea immensely. Mm-hmm. And Sandy, you mentioned an app.
WATT?
Yeah.
Wattpad, PAD.
Oh, .com?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look it up, see what's going on there, if it works for you. There's a lot of critiquing going on. It is meant to be a critique group. It's been around for a long time. It's like they share stories and everybody chimes in with something here and there. And again, in all of it, even with beta readers or people you can trust, if you find there's someone who just seems to be taking every personal vendetta of theirs out on your paper, then you know, okay, I'm not asking Aunt Betty to do this again, you know, so protect yourself too. But but for the most part, they're honored to be asked to read your work. And if they say, well, what do you want me to look for? And again, just tell them, just write little comments on in the margins. Sometimes I will often provide a physical print off copy rather than an online one, because there's still something about the immediacy of a pencil rather than typing a comment in, even though there are a lot of great, Word has a really great thing where you can write your comments. Mm-hmm. But if you print it off, even if it's a couple chapters, maybe those two mother and father chapters of yours, and say, what do you think? Am I off to the races, or should I something, get a feel for it? But I think Kathy's going to do that for you. But yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
I love it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I love it. Thank you very much.
Ruth, any aha moments for you?
Indirectly. Yeah, I got pulled away for probably about half of it that I wasn't expecting, but that's okay. So they may be more general. And no, I'm not ready to take on another book right now, but I am ready to, you know, write blogs. I'm ready to do the freelance, you know, look into that. And just as we're talking, some different things have come to mind. You know, how am I as a critiquer?
Mm-hmm.
Because I had my first opportunity, and Debbie, it actually wasn't you. It was somebody else this fall wanted me to critique some poems that she wrote. And my first response is, no, that's not me. Yeah. You know, but then the more I thought about it, I thought, yeah, I could give you some feedback.
Yeah.
You know, just so I think it's realizing that we can critique and critique, you know, can offer, you know, things that are beneficial from our background and our experiences.
Yeah. Well said.
And Ruth brought up a good point is I've already submitted, this will be my third, I've already been published in three different magazine articles. And so this coming up in a week or so will be my fourth submission to a magazine. And so there is an editor on staff in the magazine. So I have not been writing and sending it out to beta readers and critiquing and that sort of thing. I've just been writing my article, which is similar to a blog post. far as the number of words and the way it's laid out. And I submit that with two or three pictures, a little one paragraph bio of myself and a picture of me. And I submit all of that. And I've been published all three times that I've submitted so far. And they've taken editorial honors and they've rearranged some of my paragraphs and they changed what pictures I sent. And that's okay, because they had to make the whole magazine have continuity with their topic of the month that they were writing about. Like one month they were writing all about networking. And so they only wanted group pictures, you know, because they're talking about getting together and networking. So I get that. So it's things like that. And so I'm happy with that. And it's something that you then can put in, you know, your bio that you're a freelance writer, you know? And so when you're ready to go before a publisher or an agent, all of a sudden you've got a little more clout there when you can say, I've been published in this magazine, you know, so all of it fits together.
I need to skedaddle for another meeting here in 10 minutes. So I'll see you. I am so impressed, Debbie. Good luck.
Thank you.
Continue at it.
Sandy, thank you so much. Talk to you soon. And I think we're going to go as well. We're past our time, but we've had a wonderful meeting. So thank you everyone for being on, and we will see everyone next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, Kathy.
Yes.
Kathy.
Hold on.